Hi, this is Jean-Jacques Taylor, and you're listening to Jock Talk. This is a podcast where I talk about the Cowboys, the team I've covered as a beat writer, columnist, TV insider, and radio host for 28 years. I'll also talk about the NFL and the things I love, working out, streaming, food, and all things Dallas. My boy Big Joe and the Big Rig, one of my oldest friends, produces the show and occasionally chimes in with his thoughts on the Cowboys. After all, he's a lifelong Cowboys fan, and he played high school, college, and semi-pro football. Welcome to Jock Talk, where sports is fluid. What's true today might not be true an hour, a day, or a month from now. I'm going to give you the truth straight. No chasers. Glad to have you aboard. Let's get it. Welcome to episode 95 of Jock Talk, my friends. Jean-Jacques Taylor, joined by my boy Big Joe and the Big Red. What's the sit rep, dog?
Let's see here. We are 50 seconds in, and we are 5x5, my friend. Operation Jock Talk is a go.
Episode 95, who comes to mind, bro?
The great Chad Hennings.
I thought you were going to say David Irvin.
No, hell no. hey, he had potential, for sure, but that weed got him.
Dude, he had so much potential.
Yeah, he was big. Both of them guys was fucking huge. Excuse my language. They was big.
All right, let me get this out of the way so I don't forget, and then we're going to come back to that. If you are, I hope you're prepared to be entertained and dazzled for the next hour or so as me and Big Joe and the Big Rig bring you all things Dallas Cowboys, a little bit Dallas Mavericks and Dallas Stars, and then we're going to talk to Todd Archer about the draft. First, though, you know, if you're ever involved in an accident, 18-wheeler, somebody else hits you, they on the phone, texting, talking, doing all this other stuff, not paying attention, not that I've ever done that, what you need to do is pick up the phone, dial 972-934-8900. And when they pick up the phone, real talk, just say, hey, here's my situation. Now, I've told y'all this for years now. If Grinning Law brings you on as a client, it's a great day for you, real talk. A great day for you because they will walk you through a process that can be long, intimidating, contentious, all those things create anxiety for you. They take all that away because they guide you through the process, tell you when to walk, when to run, when to turn left, when to turn right. All of that is what they do for you. And that phone call, free. Consultation with them is free. Doesn't cost you anything. And the other thing I like about Grinning Law, they don't get paid unless you get paid. So you never have to wonder where you fit on the priority list. Are you number one, number two? No, you're number one for them because they don't get paid unless you get paid. It's their ability to walk you through the process. It takes the anxiety away and allows you to focus on two things: healing and renewal. Get your mind right, get your body right, and get your life back. That's what they want you focused on. They do a terrific job of it, guiding you through the process and helping their clients through one of the most difficult moments of their life. 972-934-8900 is the number if you're ever involved in an accident with an 18-wheeler, a workplace accident, a medical malpractice, any situation where somebody else's negligence has caused you some harm, you need to call 972-934-8900 and let them handle your situation for you. Duh, you made me think. I think David Irving is in the conversation. Who else, and let's just talk about the last 20 or 30 years, who else for your Dallas Cowboys had the most potential but failed to realize it? Like David Irving's in the conversation because he flashed enough to made you say, if he could really focus, man, he might really be a terrific player. Who else comes to mind like that?
Man, what's my man name? The linebacker that wore 54, Carter?
Bruce Carter?
Bruce Carter. Yeah,
Bruce Carter was a good one.
It's a sin to give him 54.
You know what? It damn sure was.
Mm-hmm.
Antonio Bryant comes to mind for
me. Antonio Bryant. Shake Williams. Sherman Williams.
Now, you know what's interesting about that? Because I don't know this. Shake is not somebody who comes to mind like that, because I never viewed him as a guy who could have been a dynamic NFL player. Now, he would say, how would you know? I never had no opportunity.
Right.
It wouldn't let me run.
Right. He was because he was outstanding at Alabama. Outstanding at Alabama.
I don't even remember him at Alabama.
Yeah, I do. I remember him and Derek Lassick at Alabama. But yeah, he was pretty good at Alabama, and he just happened to be drafted by the Cowboys
at a time where Emmitt was not letting nobody touch the ball.
Right, right, right.
That was not one of you touching the ball was not one of the options.
Right.
With Emmitt Smith at that particular time in his career.
See, it's a difference between a bust and a guy who didn't reach his potential. Sometimes a fine line. Like, what's the big tight end we had at 89? I forget.
David LaFleur.
David LaFleur was supposed to be that guy. He was never that guy. So was he a bust, or what? Did he not get his potential? Because he was like 6'7" with a bad back.
He was a bust.
Okay.
Now,
there you go.
You can classify bust.
Bust is what? Gave us nothing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, you could say Kajana Carter was a bust, but you could say that's because he tore his knee up before his first game, and, you know, back at the time where he tore it up, there was really nothing you could do about it.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny about that. It's really depend on what you describe, because you could say he was a bust because he if a guy is healthy and he's been a healthy scratch, that's a real bust right there. If a guy is injured, I guess you could call him a bust, but I'm a little less critical of a guy that's injured.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
That's why I said you had to put him in category. Like Bobby Carpenter was a bust.
Yes. Yes. I know that about killed you because he had the NFL legacy or whatever. He was Ohio State.
He had the NFL body.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was productive at a big time program.
Yep.
There was no reason to think that he wasn't going to be a good NFL player. I don't know if he's going to be a star.
Did they ask him to do what he wanted? You know, Parcells had a bad habit of asking somebody to do what they don't do. Didn't they move him inside and he was an outside linebacker?
At the end of the day, it don't matter, and here's why.
Oh.
Now, Bobby Carpenter, really, really, really outstanding person. Like, a great dude, great guy. Bobby Carpenter, this pains me to say because he's a Buckeye. But I've seen it, and I had it pointed out to me on numerous occasions. Mm-hmm. Bobby Carpenter did not like contact.
Oh, so you're saying it don't matter with him?
Yeah, with him it don't matter.
Okay,
he was a linebacker who did not like contact.
Well, yeah, you got them.
And this is why, and you have Taylor, how you want to run into 300-pound guard? Okay, number one, that was not my job. Okay, so number one, that's my job. But I remember, and I'll never, ever forget this. I was talking to a member of the coaching staff, and I was like, hey, come y'all ain't playing Carpenter.
Yeah.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
You actually on tape. You know, you're actually on tape at on one of the Hard Knocks saying, how's my Buckeye doing?
Oh, you know, because I was probably checking on him. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to go look up the exact deal, but I remember talking to a coach on the phone, and the coach told me, "Go watch the tape. Look at the." He said, "Go to the." I forget when he said. He said, "But go to this specific time of the game. Mm-hmm. Go watch the play, and then call me back." Now, when somebody tell you to do that, they want you to see something. So I went. Found on that part of the game, looked at the tape, and said, oh, my God. And I ran it back a couple more times. Oh, my God. And I went back and called him. I said, dog, I'm sorry, man. He said, yeah. And what happened was on about consecutive plays, Bobby Carpenter had Olayed somebody coming to block him.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm talking about, though. They put him, in the 4-3 playing – in the 4-3 on the weak side, he wouldn't have had to touch nobody. But in the 3-4, they moved him inside.
Well, I mean,
I'm just saying, I know what you're saying about him, but I'm saying in general, when you move somebody inside, they want to play. Like a guy in the 4-3 is going to play on errors, they say. And he probably was that type of guy. Now, to your credit, he went to Detroit and they tried to do that, and he wasn't worth a damn, so.
No, he was and that's why I say he's a great guy. But what I saw on tape, that was one of the most egregious things I've ever seen in professional football in terms of a dude. Most of the time, when they're avoiding contact, you can't really tell. I mean, if you really understand the game, you can see what they're doing. But it's very rare in the NFL, I think, that you see a guy just like, no, you're not hitting me.
Well, that's seeing that's the Wolf Hunter when they had him playing inside.
So
he was doing that. 55 was doing that. That's why the Cowboys run a game. Hell, they did that all last year. Them little bitty guys did that last year.
Well, little bitty guys, I understand. But anyway, that's why he didn't. You know, we talking about Bust. That's why he didn't work here, because once the coaches saw that, they was done.
Well, he didn't work nowhere else.
No, and you know, the dead giveaway, and I argued with Clarence Hill about this, but it was so long ago I wouldn't bring it up with him. But I argued with him about it because he tried to tell me it wasn't a big deal because I broke the story. And I broke the story. It was one of those stories that I broke not because I was some great reporter. Sometimes you break a story just because you're in the right position and you see something or you hear something at the right time, not that you were out looking for it. But I was at a hospitality party, which is what the Cowboys used to have on the road before the game. Jerry would just rent a suite. You go up to the suite, no telling who come through.
What the food look like?
Regular hotel food. Oh, wasn't okay. Nothing special.
All right.
You know, wings, Chex Mix, peanuts.
Oh, they don't even sound good.
Sodas, that kind of stuff.
Roger that.
And I was talking to somebody, and they're like, da-da-da-da-da, yeah, Carpenter's going to be inactive tomorrow, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Hey, ho-ho-ho-ho, run that back a minute. What do you mean Bobby Carpenter going to be inactive tomorrow? Yeah, Bill says he's not going to play.
Healthy scratch.
And I said, how your first-round draft pick a linebacker ain't even good enough to play special teams? Well, you know, Bill said, this requires more investigation. So I went and found whoever I was going to find, wrote the story. And, you know, Clarence was like, it's not a big deal. They got this linebacker and this linebacker and this guy playing. And I go, duh, this your first round pick. He can't do nothing to help you?
Yeah, he's supposed to be doing something.
That's an indication, my brother, that something is not right.
Yeah, Bill was famous for inactivating and activating people. First round pick. What, Ebenezer Ekibon? He ain't got no jersey in his locker or something.
Yep, he was good for that.
Yeah, crazy.
But this was the first game, first round pick. It was an indication that something was amiss and something was not quite right. And as we found out, I was right on both of those accounts. Something was amiss, and what was quite right was he couldn't play. Yeah. But let's give Todd Archer a call and talk about maybe he's got some busts that we hadn't thought about before we get into the draft. It's the Lawnmower Men show up right on time. They're actually early today.
Yeah, they are.
That's what happens when you broadcast from your home studio.
Hello.
What's up, bro? How you rolling today?
All right, what's going on?
Hey, we're having a fascinating conversation.
I'll be the judge of that.
We were kicking it around, and we were trying to come up with the Cowboys who had the most potential that was not realized. And then we moved it into Bust. And on that list was David Irving, Antonio Bryant. Who else was on that list, man? There was one other
Bruce
person.
I said Sherman Williams.
Yeah, I didn't really agree with Sherman Williams. And then we started talking about, well, what makes a guy bust? Whether it's an injury kind of bust, like maybe Kajana Carter, or a talent kind of bust, maybe like Bobby Carpenter. So for you, the question is there anybody else on the potential list we've missed in the last 20 years or so?
That's a good one. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head. Honestly, one guy I was thinking of was Martellus, but he had a decade-long career, so he wasn't a bust. It just never was going to happen. It was a bad pick by the Cowboys, the organization, not because of the player. So,
yep.
Right.
Like you could say,
that would be my only contribution to the list.
And then went on to have a good career elsewhere.
Right.
Like you could say that about Jimmy Smith. He was a bust in Dallas and went on and had a good career elsewhere.
Well, he really wasn't a bust in Dallas. Didn't he have like health stuff that
he
messed him up?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, right. Didn't he have like some kidney thing or something or whatever?
Yeah, and then they got mad at him about his rehab and shipped him out. So, man, yeah, you may be right about that. So yeah, but anyway, that's what we were kicking around. This is Tuesday, so the Cowboys are having their draft press conference later on today.
So, I'm just going to let you know before we even go there, Jacques. They might trade up, they might trade down, or they could stay exactly where they are at number 24.
Yeah, that's
just letting you know. Just like kind of put that out there.
That's kind of like lead, follow, or get the hell out the way.
Now, here was an interesting, let me see. Well, I was going to say, I was looking at the Arizona Cardinals had theirs yesterday, and somebody said, which is to me is a fairly innocuous question. Maybe that's just because we're in Dallas. And the guy was like, hey, how many people are on your draft board and about how many first-round picks you have? And this guy went on, I guess it was a GM. I mean, pretty much everybody in Arizona is anonymous. This guy went on about a 45-second statement, and he goes, you know, and at the end, the coach, who used to be with Philadelphia, goes, there was no way you were ever going to get an answer to that question. And I was just like, is it really that serious how many people you got on your draft board? Whether you have 250 or whether you have 220 or whether you have 290, is it really that big a deal?
Or if you have 110, like,
yeah.
Who cares? who cares? And if you have 16 first round grades, who cares? Like, it's you're not what I don't understand. What's that's the whole draft thing, right? Like, you're just so afraid of giving away secrets. And like you said, maybe we're just used to Jerry telling us, oh yeah, we have 17 first round grades, and you know, and it's always I always kind of raise an eye, like when you know, whoever they get in the second round, Jerry's gonna say, yeah, we had first round grade on him. Well, wait a minute. You know, it can be kind of dubious. But especially if your first round pick didn't have a first round grade, but you took him in the first round. But I don't think that'll be the case this year. But yeah, like the secrecy of the draft is just kind of stupid. I understand you don't want to give your strategy away, and yeah, you're not going to, like, I always think, like, if they answer a question about a specific player, there's no chance in hell they're drafting that guy.
Right.
Right? Now, and if you ask a question about – and then if they don't say anything about him, well, then, you know, they might be taking this guy. But another thing with the Cowboys is they're 30 list. They're national visitors. They do – they – what's the right word? Mostly they use that list – like – if you find out who those 30 are, they're going to get three of them at least, right? I mean, so that's always a good thing. And I don't know if that's any different than any other team with their 30 visits, because why would you – you only have 30 of them. Why would you waste them just for subterfuge? That to me makes no sense.
No, I feel you on that. That leads to this question. I was kicking it around with one of our colleagues the other day. When's the last time the Cowboys made a bold move on draft day, or what you consider a bold move?
Trading up from Oak Claiborne in 2012.
See, that's what I thought. That's a long time ago, bro.
Right.
Especially in sports, it seems like it's even longer. It's a long time in general. But in sports where it moves so fast, that seems like forever ago. And it seems to me, and I don't know that this is the year, but it seems to me that they need something to invigorate their franchise. They need some sort of bold move. And maybe it's coming next year, but they seem a little stale to me, even though they've been winning. They just seem a little stale to me. What do you think?
I don't think this would not be the right year to make the bold move up, because
no,
they don't have enough picks as it is to fill all their holes. Unless they're doing it in reverse, right? Yeah, before they use free agency to fill their holes, come up with a pure draft board, blah, 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 and take the best player available. And they can still – they're still going to tell us we're pure to the board. We haven't puffed anybody up, even though you know you need 17 offensive linemen, all this stuff. And then maybe after the draft is when they go get a veteran defensive tackle or another wide receiver or whatever it's going to be, right? But yeah, is Bold trading down?
Well, see, I was going to say Bold could be trading down. I saw Patrick.
And that would be Travis Frederick, I guess.
Yeah, Patrick Walker from DallasCowboys.com. I looked at his mock the other day, and it was interesting.
He traded down like every round, didn't he?
Well, he traded
twice. Or traded down, traded up, traded this way. Golly.
Well, the one that made sense was he traded down first twice in the first round. And I was like, okay, that could be kind of bold. And picked up a couple third-round picks in doing so. And I think the Cowboys were still picking like 32nd or something. Because teams just wanted to jump up two spots to grab whoever they grab. But whatever. But that could be a way to add some premium picks. But I think it's a I don't think it's an exciting draft. I think it's going to be a workmanlike draft as they try to fill these holes that they haven't filled yet.
Yeah, and like to me, the day three trades, like, you know, last year they traded this year six or something. They go get Eric Scott last year and or whatever, this year's fifth or whatever it was. Like,
right.
I've had too many people across the league that I talk to tell me that the depth in this draft is not very good because so many kids went back to school, chased the NIL money because they're going to make more money in college than they would if they were a day three pick. So the depth of the draft isn't there, even like it was, say, a year ago where you're getting guys. Now it's going to be at certain positions and things, and maybe that helps the Cowboys, say, with like a running back or whatever. But right. When you get to rounds, and look, they've done a great job in the fourth round. You know what, Jake Ferguson, a couple of years, obviously Dak. You know, who am I missing? Tony Pollard. You know, those guys are really good. Dorrance Armstrong, really good fourth round picks. But that's like gravy. You don't live in that world. You want your top 100 picks. You want your top three picks. And I'm with you. Like, I think they just need to play it smart because you need two of your first three picks. They got to be, quote, starters, if not big time contributors, however you want to label it. For a number of reasons, and mostly because of what they've not done in free agency.
Yes. You still wedded to the offensive line? I'm not sure how they skipped that, but.
Yeah, I think it has to be, right? I mean, and maybe that's when you, if the guys that you really like aren't there, then you trade down a little bit. But for our NFL Nation mock draft that we did, I took Graham Barton, a Duke kid, plug and play center. There wasn't an offensive tackle in my mind that they would take in that spot. And then if you know there's guys that you can get in second, third round. To maybe come in and compete for a starting role, which is always tricky. I got you, but as a tackle. But
where did Mims go? Where did Mims go in that mock draft?
He was not he was available when I picked, and I did not select him. I think there's questions about eight starts. That's all he had.
Right.
And is he a right tackle only? They don't need a right tackle. They need a guy who can play left tackle, and that's kind of their issue. Like, to me, if there's a guy who fall, if there's a tackle that gets to them that they would take, would be the Fautano guy from Washington.
Gotcha.
I don't know why some people think that they would that he's a guard. I watched him play live in person. I told you that about the Pac-12 title game. The dude can move. He's strong. No one gets into his body. I'd roll with that dude as the left tackle and not have any worry about it.
Now, Joe and I have gone back and forth on this. With Mims, what bothers you more, eight starts or that he hadn't played left tackle?
What bothers me more, you said?
Yeah.
I would say eight starts. And look, the kid's like, how long are his arms? He's great pass protector. Like, he's got all that stuff. But he's not done it. And I have a little worry about the Guyton kid in Oklahoma, 1 year starter as well. Like, why wasn't he able to win the job in 2022? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a little concerning to me when it came to him. I don't think he was available. I don't think Guyton was there when I picked, but Mims for sure was. And I just thought, if I'm the Cowboys, I need a guy who can come in and be ready to play and ready to go. And 8 starts, to me, is just not enough of a track record.
And I ain't paying no attention, so I can't lie. Now, we don't think this was a case of it is Georgia where there's some other second-round pick, first-round pick sitting in front of him?
There's an element of that, I guess. Yeah, right? I mean, who – now you got me thinking about who – I know that they had a first-round tackle last year.
That's kind of my point was that it's Georgia. Iron sharpens iron. 8 starts for offensive lineman. Well, he'd been practicing at Georgia the whole time. I think I'm okay with that. If it was 8 starts at quarterback where you need a little more intangible, well, a lot more intangibles, I'd be worried about that. But that way you get Mitchell Trubisky on that because the quarterback can only play one position. If you got 8 starts from a guy that's a hell of an athlete because that's how he got to Georgia in the first place, maybe I'll roll with it if I have to have that guy.
But if you've never seen him play left tackle, that's another issue, right?
Yeah.
Like, so.
Well, it's all a gamble, and then it's all about coaching too. What do you think you can do? Somebody got to sign off on it.
It's all a gamble, but it's all about mitigating risk. And if you have a guy like Barton, then you can think is your let's say, and I don't know this. Let's just for giggles, Barton's their best center. Mm-hmm. Mims is the 8th best tackle. 7th best tackle. Are your odds better on hitting on the player at this position or your 8th at that position?
I'm going to take the center. I'm going to take the center.
Understanding the importance, like if you get a tackle, that's more important theoretically than a center, although Cowboys center is going to be.
That's what we came up with because that's what I finally settled on was I'll take the center rather than the project at tackle, but If I had a choice, because the quickest way to the quarterback is up the middle,
right? So. And that's one thing. Remember, Josh Romo used to tell us that he's like, I'm okay with the guys on the outside because I can see that and I can adjust for that. It's the stuff that gets right in your face that bugs you. So if you had Tyler Smith, Graham Barton, and Zach Martin, if Barton turns out to be the guy you think he is, you're pretty good right there.
Yeah.
Maybe even better than pretty good. You're really good.
Center guard, yeah.
Right. You got any other thoughts on the draft or what we might expect to hear from your Dallas Cowboys? Not that I expect to hear very much.
Yeah, you know, this is one thing that's always come to me. Like, so many people, like Jordan Brooks has been gifted to the Cowboys in the second round in just about every multiple round mock draft, right? So doesn't that at one point, don't you start thinking the opposite? Like, there's no way this can happen. And I'm starting to think of the same way on Graham Barton, to be honest with you. And just a quick aside, when we do our mock drafts, my hope is, yes, I picked the right guy. My hope is the guy that I picked is gone because then I won't be wrong. So that's how I grade my mock draft performance. But I start to wonder if, like, Jordan Brooks – Jonathan Brooks. Sorry, yeah. Jonathan Brooks is going to be the guy. I say Jordan Brooks twice. Gosh, excuse me. Jonathan Brooks.
First one on the page.
Yeah. And too many names going through your head. I had Jordan Morgan. I was ready to say that one. The Arizona kid. It makes you start to wonder. I'm like, okay, is this really? And I know what you said is like, you know, you need a guy that can come in and play right away and be available. And will he be available? And that has to be a question the Cowboys are asking. Even if Dr. Cooper did the surgery and his rehab's gone well, I would put a dollar on it that he would start training camp on the non-football injury list because he's not done his rehab with the Cowboys, so they don't know. So, right.
My point was this is a very pivotal year. I don't have time for you to be, you know, 3/4 of the guy you're going to be, and then next year you'll be 100%. I need the guy to hit the ground running this year.
Well, that's Mike McCarthy's perspective. That might not be the organization's perspective. Right?
That's, yeah, no, that's, hey, man. Mike McCarthy, you know, he puts up a good front. I wonder what he says to his wife when he go at home. Like, the fuck?
I'm sure he's not saying that, but.
No, I don't know.
Well, he don't cuss?
I'm sure he doesn't say that to his wife, is what I'm saying.
Oh. Okay. Maybe say it to the other guys in the barn.
Yeah, like, what's going on? What's really happening?
Hello, honey. What do you think's going on today, babe?
Damn, that's mighty Caucasian right there.
I'm staying out of that one.
Golly. Hey, how you doing, dear?
That's my Ward Cleaver. There, I've dated myself big time by that. So
the guy that I just looked it up, Warren McClendon was the right tackle in 2022 for your Georgia Bulldogs, and he was the 174th pick by the Rams last year. And they had Broderick Jones play left tackle. He was first round pick that I think the Steelers took. I think last year.
Yeah.
So he was the left tackle.
There you go.
All right. Maybe a first round pick kept him off the left tackle spot.
Right, but why didn't he play left tackle this year?
I was gonna say, but that don't explain this year. So,
yeah. Right. How about this thought? Wide receiver in the first round?
Now you know me, man. I'm like, can he play? If he can play, yeah. Because you are one CeeDee Lamb injury away from disaster.
CeeDee Lamb or Brandon Cooks. I mean, right?
Yeah. But I mean, yeah. But.
Because, I'm just going, not because then you're putting Jalen Tolbert in a number two role and Jalen Brooks in a number three role or whatever would have you, whoever it would be, right? Like, I don't, and then heck, who, he's technically running out of a contract this year, and 2025 could be his last year. So, and if someone, I don't know who the guy would have to be to fall to them. Like CD did to in 2020. I don't know. Who, I don't think there's that type of guy that's going to fall, because those top three receivers are going to go in the top 11, yeah. Top 10. So,
I was going to say, maybe depends on where the quarterbacks go, whether you believe it's six quarterbacks going in the first round, and whether guys feel like they got to move up to go get their guy or not.
So I just can't see a quarterback. I can't see six quarterbacks in the first round. I just.
How come?
I don't think there's six guys that are going to be worth it. Like, so we're talking Penix and Bo Nix, right?
Yeah.
Those will be the next two guys after the front four. Like,
yeah.
That I get quarterbacks get overdrafted, but boy, that'd be highly. Oh, when's the last time six quarterbacks went in the first round?
I was thinking 83, but it seems like there's been six since then. At some point.
Yeah. It's been a while. Yeah. I can't.
You know who? All right. Let's. The Cowboys would love that if that were to happen, because then someone's falling to them that they're really going to like at a position that they need. Is this the Cowboys' biggest fear? That the best player available to them at 24 is going to be a defensive player. And let's say, like, the guy's like eighth on their board and the offensive lineman's going to be 18th on their board, right? Is that a big enough gap to where you're like, well, shoot, you got to go with the best player available? And if it's a corner, pass rusher, I'm not drafting a defensive tackle. They need grown man strength, not young kid strength. So, you know, basically it would be probably a corner, I would say. Maybe a pass rusher would be there, maybe. But what do you do? To me, that is not a good scenario for your Dallas Cowboys.
Not at all. Not for Mike McCarthy anyway. But
Mike Zimmer would like it, but yeah.
Yeah, if you draft a defensive player, Mike's going to have to throw out half his playbook.
Well, no, maybe they'll give up next year's two to get a this year's three or whatever, right?
Man, yeah. I don't know. That draft stuff is crazy, man.
No, it'd be interesting. It would not be the right scenario for them, but, you know, they've been, you know, this has been a weird offseason for them. Or it feels like it has. Maybe they thought this was going to be the way it was going to be all along. But
you almost get the sense they felt this was the way it was going to be all along.
That's what it feels like. Like, which just makes me wonder why Jerry said he was going all in when he really wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, because
it was a week and a half after the season. Right. That's what I was just going with. It was a week and a half after the season, and he was frustrated, and it was before they had all their meetings to discuss the ins and outs and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, I think he jumped the shark with that one, despite the backpedaling that they all have done on that comment since. So
what's the reality? The reality of it is this feels like a reset year.
Yeah.
Where you're trying to almost clear your books and get everything straight and, you know,
but next year is worse, because if you don't have Dak, he's $40 million on your cap and he's not even playing for you. Zach Martin's probably gone. DeMarcus Lawrence is probably gone. Brandon Cooks is going to count $4 million against your cap and probably not be here next year. So you're talking like 60 odd million in dead money on guys that aren't here trying to rebuild with who at quarterback. So, I mean,
maybe it's really that next year's the reset year, and this year is just like, we'll just see what happens.
This is the this is the all in year in terms of, hey, we're all in. If y'all win it, we'll do whatever we can. If y'all don't, we're starting over. Right? I mean, because this is what frustrates me, and I'm going to ask Stephen Jones this today. This is what frustrates me about the Cowboys. We want to sign our guys. We want to. Dak's a priority. CeeDee Lamb's priority. Micah Parsons a priority. Why aren't you talking? Like, you don't get a deal done if you don't talk. And if they're asking for the moon and you guys are offering the earth, well, you still have to talk to figure out how to bridge that distance. Like, figure it out. And he won't like when I ask this. Philadelphia has signed four guys, maybe even five now, four guys at least, that are entering the final year of their contracts. Four key guys. Their kicker, their left tackle. I knew I was going to forget who it was. Devontae Smith. And there's even another one that I'm forgetting. And Devontae Smith had 2 years left before they needed to do him. Right. They had the fifth-year option coming on him. So why are they able to do it and you can't? And I realize, like, they might have some cap situations arising in the future with their quarterback, with the structure of that contract. I gotcha. But they've taken care of their guys that they have pushed out differences or challenges that they're going to have on the cap, and they have those players. Why are they able to do it and you can't do it?
What do you think the answer is?
I don't know. That's why I'm going to ask the question.
Oh, I mean, I thought you were being like a defense attorney. Well, you know the answer before you ask the question.
They probably throw out the structure of their deals is different because they do option bonuses and they'll get all lost in the weeds and all that kind of stuff. But okay, fine. Do option bonuses then. I mean, they're getting their guys done. Like, they've been to two Super Bowls in the last, 7 years? Y'all haven't been to one in 30.
Right.
So.
As we move off the draft for a moment, let me ask you this, because I don't think we've touched base with you on it. There's a whole lot of rumbling about Micah Parsons and where he fits in the building and on the defense and all of this. It appears as though he's not training in Dallas this year. What do you make of the Micah Parsons situation? Or is there any situation?
So the I don't know if he's in Austin like he was last year, but he's clearly training away from the team. I guess he's done some boxing stuff here locally, but that's what he did last year. My issue with the Micah stuff is this. You can't say after the season that there's accountability issues and I'm going to do everything that I can to make sure we get the culture here in Dallas right. And then when the off-season program starts, you're not there. That's my biggest issue. It's not end of the world. It's not probably, it might not factor into wins and losses, but if you're going to be someone who's talking about we need to be more accountable to each other and we need to change, he's going to change the culture that they have, then you got to be there.
Yeah.
I'm not getting into the everybody in the building sick and tired of him in this, that, because I wasn't around, Jock. I don't know if you were around. I'm sure everybody in the building is sick and tired of Charles Haley, too. But there's certain guys you put up with. Like, and that's something you put up with, certainly from Jerry's perspective. While it may be true that people in the building are tired of him, it doesn't mean you're going to get rid of him.
No, it depends on which people are tired of him. As I like to say, I know for a fact I've worked with people I didn't like, or worked with people I was like, oh, if I never see this dude again, it'll be a great time.
Joe, here comes a Bart Lubbock mention.
I was just going to say, I'm sure people felt the same way about me.
I haven't heard that name in a long time, but I heard that. I heard that name a bunch. Yes, I have.
Well, primarily because he was supposed to call some people one night by the coaching search, and he didn't call the people.
I knew that was coming.
And so, you know, it ended up like Ed Werder's story. Like, I didn't one time do something I was supposed to do on the beat with Ed Werder, and he called and yelled at me and cussed me out, and I felt bad. And so this was that situation. You're supposed to do something. You didn't do it. And so I let you know about it, not in a friendly way. Now, me and Arch never had those issues. We were both very responsible beat guys. I got you. You got me. That's why we kicked ass and took names, no matter what one Clarence E. Hill Jr. would like to remember it. Now, that's all I'm going to say about that.
Well, it take a special human being to be your co-pilot.
It certainly does, Joe. You're right.
That's right.
I think I worked hard. I put the time in.
It ain't the work.
Things that were required.
It ain't the work. Yeah, you a hard worker.
What was it, man?
It's the price of genius. What was it? It's the price of genius dealing with you. That's it, you know.
Am I hard to work with, Arch? You can tell the truth. I'm not going to be mad.
No, I didn't say that. It's the other stuff.
Yeah. What, my sniffing? My occasional arrogance?
Nah.
My occasional attitude?
Yeah, all of that. You know what?
I never said a cross word to Arch. Me and Arch never even had a raise your voice argument that I remember.
I don't remember one either.
How about that? Because we were
let's get back to the Cowboys.
Teammates.
Yeah. You going? Yeah. Let's get back to the Cowboys.
Now there were some other partners players. I did raise my voice with. Yes. So Micah Parsons, do you think there's any chance? Because I have had this conversation. Like, if you got the Khalil Mack price, 2 first round draft picks, and a second, and you had to give up a third or a fifth somewhere along the way. Not maybe this year, but next year when you're resetting, could you see that happening? Like, what's the point of having him if you ain't gonna be no good?
Jerry's not in the habit of trading away his best player since Herschel Walker, and that was a 1-15 team. So,
right,
I don't think as a reset, I don't think that next year's team will be 1-16. So that would should it be on their list of things to consider? Yes, because everything should be on your list of things to consider. Will they actually consider it? No, I don't think they will, because Jerry won't consider it. So it's why even go down that road?
All right.
Because look, we talked about 3 years ago. we talked about 3 years ago. They should consider signing Tom Brady. They should consider signing Matthew Stafford. Not because of what Dak was or is or isn't or any of that stuff, but because the price was going to be so big, so different from what you had to give Dak that what you would – what was Brady making from Tampa? It wasn't 40. No, like I think 30. Stafford's at like 40. 30. Yeah. Right. Okay, would they have been better served going that route and having that $10 million difference of going and getting other players for that roster? Again, something you should consider. I'm not advocating that they should have done, but at least something you should consider. And there are times that I don't know if they consider, realistically consider all of their options.
Speaking of that, the last couple things, Dak Prescott, you expect him to be the quarterback in 2025?
Man, that's a great question. I want to say yeah, but
it feels like no to me, bro.
Right. And here's Dak's going to get $200 million from somebody, especially if he hits the open market next year. And as we discussed, there might be – all it takes is one team. There might only be five right. when you look around the league of who could actually do it and who can afford them. It's not trending in the greatest of ways. And when Dak says, I'm comfortable either way. I'm fine. I don't fear not being here. This is where I want to be. This is where I am right now. But if something happens in the future, we'll see what happens. You know, he's playing the game as much as the Cowboys playing the game when they're saying, Trey Lance has done all these great things since we got him. We really like Trey. We want to see him play in the preseason. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, everybody's trying to help their bargaining position. This stuff shouldn't be this hard. It goes back to that they're not even talking. Like, figure it out. Like, you put the personal stuff aside. If you – whatever feelings you have about the last deal or the agent, like, sometimes you got to – it's not like to – look, I'm not saying give away the farm to all these guys, to CD, Mike, and Dak, to give them whatever they want. But do something to get a deal done. And there's been none of that right now on any of the guys.
No. But it feels like that to me just because, like you said, they haven't been talking. And Ty France, from what we've seen, is not a guy where, we get the deal done in a week. And so it seems like, training camp is really not that far off. And I just don't see – if you get close to the regular season, I just don't know why you wouldn't just see what's out there with free agency. And so
right.
I've kind of come to grips with this is going to be his last year. I haven't seen a single or heard a single thing this offseason that made me believe they were going to get a deal done. And maybe, and I'm not mad at them if they've decided this, maybe they've just decided Dak's a great dude. He's a great leader. He's a really good quarterback. But he's not taking us to a Super Bowl. So, let's just – reset it and start over and see if we can find a Super Bowl quarterback.
Right. And, the history says if you've not done it by this time for the first time, you're not going to do it with the franchise you're with. So, it's both sides get not what they want, because I don't think either side wants to go away from each other, because Dak loves being in Dallas and playing for the Cowboys, and the Cowboys have a really good quarterback that they know can win some games. And it just gets into a cost factor of, is Dak at – give me a number, Jacques. What's the average per year going to be? If it's $60 million, he ain't going to be here. So it don't matter. So
no.
$54 million.
I could probably stomach $54 million. Probably. I don't really want to pay him more than that, and I'd be happier paying him closer to 50, but I get it. So, 54, that's probably as high as I'm willing to go, because I realize how you like to play these things, but you're not one of the top five quarterbacks in the league, to me. You're somewhere between probably 9 and 12. You haven't really had – and even though the Cowboys have been losing in the postseason, it's not like you've been putting up these big numbers and we've been losing. Your numbers have been fairly pedestrian. So,
well, the first half against Green Bay, he played poorly. The two San Francisco games, he played poorly. Like, if you go back and look at Dak's numbers in the pack, right? If you look at the Packers game, you look at Dak's final numbers, like, wow, Dak had a pretty good game. But then you remember the first half, and you're like, no one had a good game in this one, and that's when the game was lost. So, but to me, Dak has followed. Not the parallel path, but certainly the track laid by Kirk Cousins of playing on the franchise tag, letting it play out, waiting, and cashing in. And now we see Minnesota finally said, look, we can't do this anymore. And Kirk Cousins is now in Atlanta after however many years he was in Minnesota, right? So it's kind of the same deal.
I think here's a $64,000 question. Are you more afraid of getting rid of Dak Prescott? And I'm talking about if you're just a fan or you're somebody who analyzes the situations like we do. So what's your bigger issue, person? Is it getting rid of Dak Prescott or is it getting on the quarterback journey? And I say probably for me, it's really more about getting on the quarterback journey because you literally have no idea how long it's going to take.
Right.
But you just have to come to grips with it.
Right. Because we always say, man, what a risk that is. You don't know what you have at quarterback and when you're going to find the guy again. And they got lucky the last two quarterbacks they found, an undrafted free agent and a fourth round pick. We understand that risk. We never talk about the risk of paying the guy $55, $60 million a year and what that does for the rest of your roster.
Yeah,
that's a risk too. So look, I'm not an analytics guy and can come up with all those fancy schmancy numbers and on those things, but there's an element of risk in that involved as well. That I think I said it to you 2 weeks ago when we talked. At some point, teams have to start looking at these quarterbacks in 5-year segments, and after year three of these quarterbacks, draft the next guy. Because the cost of it is just so prohibitive that it screws over the rest of your roster.
Yep.
Yeah, and you just have to come to grips with, if he's that guy, we'll pay him. And if he's not that guy, we'll let you go. And I think you have to be really antiseptic about it. You can't be emotional about it. You just have to be. You know, my dude is studying to be a day trader. And he told me the most interesting thing a couple weeks ago. He said, I said, you ready? Because he's been dealing with this. This guy's been training him, and he's been working in paper accounts where it's like fake money. And he goes, I go, you ready for the real money yet? He goes, nah, I needed some more time. I go, well, what's the time about? He says, you know, Dad, I can read the charts exactly the way I'm supposed to read them. But I'm still too emotional about winning money and losing money. He said, the best traders have no emotion at all. They just follow the chart. And whatever the chart says do, they do. And it doesn't matter whether they made a bunch of money off that move or they lost a bunch of money. They just made the move they were supposed to make. He goes, I ain't there yet. And that's kind of how I feel like this. You just have to be like, hey, our quarterback is not the guy. On to the next one. But you're like, damn. I don't want to spend 7 years looking for that guy. Well, if you accept the fact that that's what it is, maybe you're more aggressive in your hunt as opposed to the cheap-ass way they've tried to find quarterbacks over the years.
And I guess, you know, you use how they found Dak as maybe a warning sign of what – because this scouting operation hasn't done the quarterback search, right, with Will McClay and his guys. But they wanted to draft – Jerry wanted Paxton Lynch. Good thing that didn't happen. Then they wanted – it might be somebody else. But then they wanted Connor Cook. Good thing that didn't happen. But I'd make the argument, like, there are ways that you can be aggressive that now that teams have shown of going out and getting a quarterback. It doesn't mean you're going to be right, but you're yeah. going out and being aggressive and adding this guy in a trade that maybe didn't work for that team, but you still had a feeling of the guy. I'm thinking of like Wentz when he got dealt from Philly to where did he go first? Washington, Indy, wherever the heck he went first.
He took his own journey.
You're right. So, you know, it's all a risk, but acknowledge the risk on the other side when you're paying that kind of money to do that, what you're not going to be able to do for the rest of your roster. And I just think at some point, this is year 9. If it's not happened, is it really going to happen here? It doesn't mean Dak can't win a Super Bowl or go to a Super Bowl somewhere else, and they'll hate that. The Cowboys will, much like Jerry hated DeMarcus Ware going to Denver and winning a Super Bowl.
right.
But that's just the way it happens, man.
I think right now we're going to be average regardless. It's going to be average because if Dak leaves, the roster is not that good. If Dak stays, then we're going to just keep the status quo, and we're not going to go nowhere. So it's lose-lose either way to me.
But would the roster have a better chance of getting better quicker with the rookie quarterback money or the low quarterback money, like whoever the Baker Mayfield type of dude is? I don't even know what Baker's making now, so it might be a last year's Baker Mayfield or a couple years ago Geno Smith. Like, are you know, is that how you go about it?
That's the question. That's the question I asked Doc. I mean, it's the question I asked Jacques the other day. Was if Dak leaves, is Jerry gonna use that money that he saves on Dak to build a roster, to build a team, or is he just gonna leave it like it is? You know, we're gonna keep Trey Lance, and you know, because Jacques was saying something about you don't get to control. You know, he was saying something like, is it going to be where Jerry is going to do the right thing?
I didn't get that. Could you try again?
There goes Siri again. But
hi, Joseph.
Hi, Joe.
Basically, you don't get to determine what Jerry does with the money.
Right,
when
he leaves, yeah.
Whether he makes a good decision, whether he makes a bad decision, or whether he puts it in the kids' trust fund.
Yeah.
You don't get to decide that.
Yeah, but that's what that's the question I was asking Jacques earlier this week, was that would Jerry do something with the money that he saves with Dak, or would he just keep it in his pocket? I don't know.
It depends on what you think. What would that be? You're talking about like going out and spending big money on free agents or whatever? I don't know, but I think you'd maybe see them more aggressive. Maybe not at the high end of the market if you got a guy in a rookie contract, but maybe in the middle of the market, and now they're not even in the market. So that would be different for how they would approach it if they were to go that way.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll all look forward to listening and hearing to Jerry today and see what lies he tells when his lips are moving, him and Steven today. When they meet the media and talk about the draft.
They can trade up. They can trade down. They can stay where they are.
It's a lot of good players out there. A lot of guys, and hopefully there'll be some blinking lights when it's our turn to
play. Blinking lights. Yeah, I was just going to say that. Yep.
Dude, we really should have a Cowboys draft press conference bingo card and, see what pops up on it. Maybe I'll see if we can put one together before it starts. All right, my brother, I appreciate you.
All right.
I'll talk to you soon.
See you guys.
Later.
Thank you.
All right. That, my friends, is Todd Archer, brought to you each and every Wednesday by our friends at Smokey John's Barbecue. Smokey John's Barbecue, 1820 West Mockingbird, home of the what? The Jam Session Bowl. That's a beautiful, wonderful mix. It's a bowl with a mac and cheese or a mashed potato base. You then get to pick 2 out of 5 smoked meats. Your boy usually rocks with the sausage and the brisket. And then all that stuff you find on a loaded baked potato, all of that stuff, you know, chives and cheese and bacon bits and butter and sour cream, all that stuff, man. They slap it on top, and then they say, hey, you want us to drizzle it with sauce? or drench it with sauce. Either way is great. I prefer to drizzle. And then you just go to work on it. Seriously. Now, if you got a little shorty, 6 or 7, 3 of y'all can eat off a Jam Session bowl, no problem at all. It is to live for. Now, check this out. It's on the secret menu. So if you go there and you look at the menu on the side right before you place your order, it ain't going to be there. You got to ask for it. You got to know it's there. And then you just say, hey, give me the Jam Session bowl. And watch the people go, oh, my God, what's that? Hey, man, what's that? Where's that? It's not there. You have to ask for it. You have to know it. And then you get it, and you now, you know, Joe ate his separately so he could taste each of the individual flavors. I put all mine together, and I took a spoonful, and right off the bat, it was what? Love in your mouth. Jam Session bowl. Get some. It's fantastic. It is to live for. Wouldn't you say that, bro? I guess he's cut the mic because he won't want to say nothing bad. But that's the Jam Session bowl, brought to you each and every Wednesday by Smokey John's Barbecue. Let's go to the block, man. You real funny, dog. You real funny. You give me the silent treatment on the slide by turning the mic off. You ain't slick, though, man. I got to thinking this morning. Two things I was thinking this morning. Number one is, I encourage everybody to do this. I do this sometimes. I don't do it all the time. I do it sometimes. Call your boys or your girls, whatever the case may be, and just check on them. Real talk. Because people be going through some stuff, some poop, some BS. And, you know, a lot of times people don't want to show weakness. And so they're like, hey, they just going on doing their thing. I've been guilty of this in the past. A lot of times when I'm going through some BS, and my closest friends know some stuff I went through. And occasionally I can isolate myself. I just like, I don't want to be bothered with nobody. I don't want to talk to none of y'all. Just leave me alone. And that's really the worst thing you can do. So call some of your boys, check in on them. Hey, what's up? I'm just checking in on you. How you rolling? It's all good. It's all bad. Whatever the case may be. Because one of my boys called me this morning, and I was at the gym, and I was happy that I was up and alert and working out. And the first thing I said was, why is he calling me at this time? And I picked up the phone and said, you good? He said, yeah, I just need to talk for a minute. I said, oh, okay, let's talk. And so, but that's all it was. I was glad he reached out, and I was glad I was there. And so that's why I'm encouraging all of y'all to just check in on your people. Just a quick check-in. Make sure everybody good. Because you never know what people are going through. I had another friend of mine from, he's a little bit older than me. He was instrumental in me getting hired when I was in college at the local paper. Well, his 47-year-old son literally just dropped dead a couple days ago. And it was just yet another reminder that, you know, we ain't promised tomorrow and that life is short and precious and all those cliches that we hear. And it just reminded me that you should just check in on your people, man, because of those things. And, you know. That's kind of like my PSA on that. So, yeah. Now, moving on to this other thing.
Wait a minute.
Well, I mean,
I agree. Let me say something. I agree 100% with that. One of the things that make us good friends, that I knew you was going to be a long-time friend, was I remember when my grandfather passed away. I didn't know how good of friends we were. But there you were at my grandfather's funeral. You know what I'm saying? That right there, it meant a lot to me as a friend. That was your way of checking on me. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
I can't remember. I think it was 2011. We was friends, but that's a real friend right there. And sure, I know when you went through stuff, when you went through some things, I've called and checked on you. And we've checked on each other. So, yeah, what you're saying is true. And that's the way you are. Now, I put up with all that other crap you do, cause That's what kind of, you know, deep down, that's what kind of guy you are. You're going to show up for support. You know, my mom, one of two of the most important people. I think he was there for my grandma's funeral, too. But I know that's some people take that for granted as a friend. But when I look back and I saw you there, I don't think I was shocked. But then I realized, you know, what kind of friend you were. So, yeah, I appreciate that.
I think I was talking the other day about having always, you know, I go through these different phases of my life where, you know, some other times I was a little more selfish and thought about myself and instead of some other people. Like, I didn't attend, like, one of my big regrets in life is an event that I didn't attend. And you have to be careful that you don't do this. So that's why I'm telling y'all this now. I won't tell the specific people because everybody don't need to know what I'm talking about. But, like, it's a situation where, let's just say you got an uncle. Okay, this is not about any of my uncles, okay? But say you got an uncle, but you mad at his son because his son did something really bad to you.
Mm.
And the uncle is having a party, and you like, I ain't going to the party because I don't want to deal with the son who I know going to be at the party. And see, that's really about you. The party is what? To celebrate the uncle. Mm-hmm. Screw the son. Mm-hmm. You ain't even got to say nothing to the son. Hey, man, what's up, man? I ain't got nothing to say to you. Bye. Or you can just be like, what's up, and make it clear that that's all we need to say to each other. But you're not there for the son. You're there for the uncle. Now, you know, there have been times where I forgot that I was there for the uncle, and I was like, screw the son, or screw the daughter, or screw whoever made me mad, or who I felt violated me, which they did. But it wasn't about me, and it wasn't about them. It was about the person who I loved, who was... That's what the celebration was for. So, you know, you have to overlook those things, which can be hard in the moment. And again, you might not think, and I didn't, like, okay, I didn't go, so no big deal. Man, the people be hurt that you didn't go.
Yeah.
And that's happened to me 3 different times before I finally got it through my head. One of them was family, but, you know, 2 of them weren't, but they were as close as family. And I was like, damn. And then they get mad at you. And you're like, oh, I guess, oh, you did want me there. Oh, my bad, man. And it's all because you got caught up in your own selfishness and forgot that it really wasn't about you. As Carly Simon's song, you thought the song was about you.
Yeah, you're so vain. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I tell you, the way I deal with that is, I got family members like that, and they used to hurt my feelings a lot when I showed up at events. What you got to do is you got to... Don't expect them to change. Don't expect them to mature. Don't expect them to be nice. Expect them to be the assholes that they are. And that way, when they nice to you, you get a pleasant surprise. But then when they act like they self, you're already on the defensive, and you can just say, all right, I ain't dealing with this cat. And then you go enjoy the people that you're supposed to enjoy, you know. It's your expectations
that's 100%.
That get your feelings hurt.
Yeah, that's 100% true. I call it, in this era that I'm in right now, and I try to treat everybody like this now. I meet people where they at. And so, you know, and for me that means if you, just like you said, if you're a 7-letter cuss word, then I meet you there and that's what I expect. And you can surprise me, but that's what I expect.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm prepared for that energy. And so I just give you the very quick, we don't really have to talk energy. I literally meet people where they at. The energy that you give off, I accept that as that's who you are. I don't expect change. I don't demand change. I just meet you there, and I can decide how long I want to fool with that.
Yeah.
And that gives me a piece of a degree of sanity, and it gives me control over my circumstance and who I'm dealing with and who I'm messing with, and it alleviates a lot of anxiety and frustration.
Yep.
Because I meet you where you at.
Yeah.
And then I'm good.
Yeah. That's like they say, Joe.
Expectations have been tempered.
They say, Joe, how you doing? Good. How's your family? Good. That means you need to move the hell on. That's what that means. You get them one word answers. You know.
No, it's true. I ain't got nothing for you.
Yeah, how you doing?
Nothing for you.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. Hey, I'm sorry. I need to make a call. Thank you. I'll be back in a little bit. Good to see you. And keep it moving. Because it's for me. It's not for y'all. And so I've had to learn that over the years. But I was glad that I was able to be there for my friend this morning. You know, I hope you guys can make some time and be there for your friends. You know, and just be available. Make yourself available. You know, because life is hard out there, man. Life be lifing. And sometimes you need a little help, a little crutch to help you through a moment, a little cane to help steady you as you're getting wobbled by life for just a moment.
Man,
that's back to normal.
That's some good stuff, man. That's good stuff. It's way better than glass bottles, dog. Just
hey, man, life be life. We all been wobbled.
That's some good stuff. For sure.
You know, I was telling my boy this morning, he was talking about some of his issues. I was like, dog, I had to make a phone call this week, man, that I've been putting off making for 3 months. And I said, I put it off because I didn't want to deal with it. And then not dealing with it, it was making things worse. So I finally just said, Taylor, what are you doing, dog? I mean, I sat down and had to talk to myself. Say, hey, man, pull your head out your ass and go do what you need to do so you can move on. Because once you make this phone call, you can clear this thing up and you can move on. And then you're done with it. And so I made the call. And, you know, I have a meeting on tomorrow. And then once I had this meeting, guess what? I'm done with it. And so, but, you know, you have to come to those places with yourself. So I was telling him, that's how you got to do it, man. I said, you know, because life be out here lifing. And you got to figure out your way to maneuver through it. And none of us is so strong that we don't need some help along the way. But sometimes you're too proud to ask for it, or you're too embarrassed to ask for it. But, you know, I have this for, I learned this from my boy Corey Borner, the former DeSoto football player who's in a wheelchair from a football accident. When he was 16 years old, he's 30 now. So think about that. Almost half his life he's been in a wheelchair. And, you know, he thanks God every day. I said, even on your bad day? He goes, yeah, because even on my bad day, when I think it's really bad, he goes, I guarantee you, there's some people out there much worse than me. And I focused on that. Like, this is the worst I'm going to be. But there's some people who would trade this set of problems for theirs. Now, you might think that's a little cliche-ish, but that shit is real. I know some of them personally who would trade their set of problems for mine. And I know some, so, you know, it just goes like that. It really is true that you don't have to look too far to find out somebody who got it worse than you. And so if you can kind of embrace that, it can help you through some of those tougher moments.
Well, there's always there's a line from, it's funny, I took the line from Hannibal Lecter. When at the end of the movie, when Clarice thought he was going to come kill her and stuff, she said, he goes, the world is a better place with you in it. Well, when people, when I hear people talk about suicide or I don't want to be here no more, it's a Hannibal Lecter line, but I put a twist on it. I always tell my friends, look, man, the world is a better place with you in it. You understand? That's why I tell them all the time. If I feel like they feel like that, or if they talking like that, I just want you to know the world is a better place with you in it, and everybody will miss you. And whatever you're going through, I'm here to talk to you. That's just how I do it. So
that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't trying to go down that road this morning. I was really going to talk about what car did you have growing up.
My mom gifted me a 73 Caprice. Not an Impala, a Caprice. A thing that had doors long as Texas on it.
I bought my first car only because we only had one car. And my mother had to use it to go back and forth to work. And it was a 71 Volkswagen, pale yellow, somewhat ugly, that I nicknamed Stymie. And then its saving grace was, you know, Volkswagen Bug, the trunk is in the front, the engine's in the back.
Right.
And I got too close to an 18-wheeler. And I bumped into the back of the 18-wheeler. I said I got too close. And it dented the hood, which is the front of the car.
Right.
And but it was such that, you know, I hit it and then I slowed down and then the truck separated. So nobody ever stopped and the truck probably didn't even feel it. Well, somehow I went and found at a drugstore, convenience store, dollar store somewhere, like this 12-inch Band-Aid. And I put that on the front of the car where the dent was, man. And I thought that was like the funniest thing ever.
Yeah.
But that was my 71 Volkswagen. And I used to, and you know, you think that your car ain't special until Sharon McDowell says, "Hey, Shaq, can you give me a ride home?" And you go, "Why, yes, I can."
Yeah, yeah.
Hop in.
Yeah, for real.
Now, Sharon McDowell, I haven't seen her. I don't think I've seen her since our 28th reunion. Although she's on Facebook. But she was fine as the day is long.
Well, she sound
back
fine.
Back in 11th grade.
Sharon McDowell sound fine right there. I was just thinking, well, the way you put them syllables on that name, that's an indicator right there. Sharon McDowell.
So, I used to get Sharon McDowell right.
Kind of like Tanoa Mitchell.
See?
There you go.
And, you know, I ain't seen her in years. So I hope she's doing well. But she brightened up those afternoon ride home in Stymie. Now, the other thing is, me and Michael Johnson, your track Olympian, we had some of the greatest adventures of all time in that car because I would ride up to the bus stop my senior year, his junior year, and if I rode up, he'd get off the bus and then we'd ride to school together and solve all the world's problems. And that car created so many adventures, man, from being raggedy. One time it stopped on the side of the road. This is after I picked him up and we saw the school bus coming. So we out hiding behind the car because what could be worse than peeling off in the 71 Volkswagen and then your car stopped and then everybody see you on the side of the road as they're on their way to school?
Yeah.
What could be worse than that?
I ran out of gas in the Wendy's drive-thru one time. We was trying to front on these girls, you know, they was fine. This girl named Angie and her friend, yeah, Angie liked me, and I was like, "Hey, how you doing? What's going on?" I, you know, and then next thing you know, that thing ran out of gas. Her friend was laughing, and we had to push it out the damn drive-thru. There you go. Well, you got to park it, go get the gas can, and walk it, all of that. So, yeah, been there, done that.
Back in the day, wasn't no cell phones.
No.
Gotta make that move.
No.
One time, me and Mike was riding home. It was a rare ride home because obviously he had track practice in the afternoon. So this must have been in the fall before track really started. And it's a thunderstorm. Windshield wipers just stopped in the middle of the thunderstorm. Got to pull over. Didn't have no oil in the car one time. It stopped. So we had all
but you bought
of
it,
misadventures.
Though. But you bought the car, though. That would impress me. You bought the car, you know.
No, I bought it.
Yeah.
I bought it for $1,400.
That's a lot of money.
It was 800 or 1,400.
Either one is a lot of money for a kid back then. That's a lot of McDonald's work right there, for sure.
Hey, remember, what did I do? I left McDonald's and started working at the Anatole Park.
That's right. Yeah.
Why I had a bunch, because check this out, so... You work at McDonald's, you make $3.75 an hour. You work 20 hours. Mm-hmm. That's like $60. You get paid every 2 weeks. That's $120, more or less.
Yeah.
Well, at the Anatole, I was making about $50 a day.
Okay. Because
I was parking cars, working 7 to 3.
Right.
I make $50 on Saturday. I make $50 on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Then what I do? I go to school Monday through Friday. I ain't got no time to spend no money. I go back to work on Saturday and Sunday, make another $50, $50. Right. So I was making money, and I didn't have no time to spend the money. And so that's how I ended up with, you know, I was rich as a high school kid. I was so rich that my sister probably stole $100 from me, and I didn't notice it because again, I was working in the cash business. So, and you know, I was anal retentive. And so I'd have my bills in one spot. I had a pouch with quarters in it. Because I used to get, what was that cologne, man? It was gray.
You used flannel, to get that. You used right? to get that high karate?
Nah, that gray flannel, man. Shut up. And it used to come in a little pouch. Well, I put all my quarters in one pouch, all my dimes and nickels in another pouch. And years later, my sister was like, because I was like, asked her one day, I said, "You taking my change?" "Oh, no, no, big brother. I would never take your change." Well, I think you're taking my change.
If you asking, she's it's like, gone.
No. Dog.
Yeah, if you asking,
and
it's gone.
Years later, she was like, "I robbed you blind. I must have stole $10 a week in quarters, nickels, and dimes to finance my lifestyle." I said, "Yeah." She said, "I really got you on them dimes and nickels because you wasn't really paying attention to that. I would only take so many quarters. And I would never take your bills because I knew you kind of dim. But dimes and nickels," she goes, "I just robbed you blind on dimes and nickels."
Yep.
Yeah, it was all good, though. But that's our trip around the block this week, man. David giving me the cockeye, which means I've been too long. And so we want to thank Smokey John's Barbecue and Grinny Law, because the show does not happen without them. And remember, you can follow us on YouTube at The Real Jacques Talk. I promise you, we got some stuff popping in May that you don't want to miss. Dave's been working on it. I've been working on it. It's about ready to launch. You can follow us on IG at The Real Jacques Talk. You can follow me on Twitter at JJG, at JJT Jones. I've not been drinking this morning, although I could use one. If you think you follow me, you don't, because my account was hijacked. A long story. I promise you we'll have to get into one day. And then hit me up on Clapper. That's right. Just download Clapper. I am Jean-Jacques Taylor's the handle. Easy to follow on there. A lot of cowboy videos on there. 16 of them as we speak right now. But that's where I put most of my cowboys commentary. So follow me on there. And we'll have a good time. So until we chat again, for Big Joe and the Big Rig, you guys be blessed.